Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to our teleseminar called The Art of Letting Go. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure having you on the line today. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, JC Mack. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work today, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking JC a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners. Now, JC and I have been friends for a few years now, and he is someone who has had an absolutely profound impact upon my life. Just actually being in the presence of JC is enough to help you to not only become present to your own personal life, but to really connect with the spiritual essence of who you are in a far greater way than you ever thought imaginable. Now, JC's, I guess all the time that I've spent with JC, he certainly had that impact on my own life personally and really helped to shape and cultivate a lot of things inside of myself and bring them alive and allow me to come fully present to them. So for that, I'm really grateful, and it's really exciting to once again have him on the show. JC's been a regular People You Should Meet guest, and I guess bringing him in to chat about a conversation about letting go is really very exciting for me, and I'm very, very happy to have him here with us today. So welcome, JC.
Well, thank you very much. Humbling. Thank you for the introduction, Damien.
It's great to have you here, JC.
It's always nice to know you can make a difference somewhere.
Absolutely. Well, JC, it is a amazing and absolutely fascinating conversation of letting go, but for some reason it's not a conversation that's often discussed in our modern context. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people what exactly letting go means and why you think it's so important, particularly in our modern Western world.
Well, let me just start by giving a little bit of context to the conversation we're going to have, because we run into a dilemma right from the very beginning, which is trying to explain the unexplainable. So I might be able to add a little setup to that dilemma before we get into the conversation, because I've been through the questions and there's some wonderful questions there and some real life situations that people are living in these days and the struggle people have with the world they live in and the world they perceive. So for me, I think what would be of some real value in terms of the purpose for the conversation is to have people, I mean, this is what would be a success for me, if we could have people glimpse, even just the smallest glimpse, of what it's like outside their current paradigm of what they currently perceive as reality. Because we all kind of live in boxes. You know, fish don't know they swim in water, so it's very difficult to see outside of yourself. And we often spend a lot of our time working inside that little fish tank, trying to move things around to make our lives and improve our lives and to achieve the things we want to achieve, but we're still inside the same little fish tank. So part of the dilemma is having a linear conversation, and what I mean by that is anything that has to do with the world and the perception of form and appearance and the mind and the way almost all of us look out at the world. So if anything that has to do with appearances of the world of form in a different place, you can see is an illusion. But when you're in that place, it looks like a real illusion. So most of us walk around, if not almost all of us, looking out through our eyes and through the perception of life, believing that what they're seeing is reality. And it often isn't, because it's clouded by a lot of different things. You know, it's clouded by karma, it's clouded by our upbringing, it's clouded by our belief systems, it's clouded by all kinds of things that have happened to us in life that set up filters that contribute to the perception of how we view the world. And all of that perception, that linear kind of perception, is coming from the ego, which is also part of the world of form. So my communication language is part of the linear world of form. So what we're going to do is have a conversation with the only tool I have available to me, which is language and my experience. So what I'm attempting to do through that tool, let's say, which is really not a very effective tool to explain what it's like beyond there. But we'll give it a go anyway. Because if it can bring a small insight, it can help shift the perception and raise the consciousness of the person. And at each level of consciousness, things look different. So I wanted to put a little bit of context around that. Because it'll be flipping back and forth between those two things. There'll be a conversation we're having, and then there'll be moments where, you know, the mind won't be able to grasp part of the conversation because it'll be no longer using the mind to try and understand, you see. The mind tries to understand it. And you can't understand something beyond duality or the linear world of form and appearance and all the rest of it. So it's a bit of a dilemma right from the start. But, you know, I'm not saying language doesn't have a powerful effect on distinguishing things, so that's what we're going to try and do. We'll do the best we can in trying to distinguish and bring an insight of what it's kind of like to step outside of the way you see or how you perceive reality. And I think if we get even close to that, we'll have had a good conversation. That kind of makes sense?
Absolutely.
So now, let's just throw a disclaimer in. What we're about to say, don't go tell your doctor or they'll lock you up.
Kids, don't try this at home.
Don't send me your medical bills if you're in the psychiatric ward after the conversation. You know, I'm just kidding.
Cool.
So, you know, having said that, back to the question of letting go. So, when we're dealing with something like this, we're dealing from a linear perspective of what really, at a different level, doesn't exist. So, it looks real. My attachment to the world looks real. You know, everything appears permanent, might be the word. But at a different place, it doesn't look like that. It doesn't mean those things, there aren't things going on in the world, but how you see them determines an awful lot. And the closer you are to reality, the less there is to really let go of. So the more we suffer from our attachments in life is an indication of the distance we have between reality and illusion. And so from one perspective, you might say there's no such thing as letting go. Because beyond the linear world of duality and that world of you know, to a shift into a non-dual state or a non-linear state, letting go is not a possibility because there's nothing to let go of. But from a different level of consciousness, it looks very real, and I've experienced it many times in my own life, having to let go of people I've lost in life, careers I've lost, you know, possessions I've lost, friends I've lost, all of these things at some time or another from a particular level of consciousness I was residing at that time created a lot of suffering because it does occur as real. Hence the term real illusion. So, yes, there's two things as we flip back and forth in the conversation. One is, well, what's it like beyond duality to have a look at the world? And how does it appear and occur for people, or how does it emerge for people, might be a more accurate term. And what's it that's restricting someone from having a view or a glimpse of what that's like, instead of continually trying to solve the problem at the level it's created. See? That'll keep you here for another 9,000 lifetimes, you know? Because you just keep repeating the same thing, you know, over and over again, working the same thing, trying to get somewhere with the same tool. And the tool's a bit faulty. You know, the ego isn't all that sharp. In fact, it doesn't have any intention of you leaving that kind of domain. It would rather keep you there, playing around with what it's designed to do. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. And yeah. Jester, we sort of mentioned early on the intention of actually giving people a glimpse of what life is like beyond that duality. And you had a personal experience in 2005 that helped you transcend the line into a non-dual world. And I guess it was an experience where the filters came off and you were able to see clearly. And I was just wondering if you could actually give people a glimpse of what that experience was like for you.
Certainly. These things, you know, there's many ways up a mountain. You know, and in my case, and it's different for everybody, some people have a gentler ride than others based on some conditions. Other people have a rougher ride. Mine came unannounced while hanging up a phone one day, where an energy started coming down through the top of my head, up through my hands, up through my legs, and it intensified and intensified. And then the sensation of water, like being underneath a waterfall, started. And it started pounding me down to the ground, and I thought I was having a heart attack. So I'm sitting in my office, and the next thing I know, I'm on the floor, and I think I'm dying. And this goes on. I can't tell you for how long. And the next thing that occurred to me was, well, I don't have any pain going down my right arm or my left arm or any symptoms that I've heard of that indicate I might be having a heart attack, so it must be a stroke. So I'm going through all these terrors of dying and leaving the planet. You know, there was a sadness that came with it, that after all this, it's going to end on the floor in my office alone. And so the energy, it just kept building and building and building. And then it felt like an arthritis came over me and every bone in my body started to ache. And I couldn't move. So I got down on the ground before I fell down. And I kind of just I laid there for some time trying to move, and I couldn't move while this energy was surging through me. And it got to a point where I realized that it wasn't a heart attack and it wasn't a stroke. And that if I was, for some reason, about to die, then what was I going to do about it? Was I going to grab on and hold on as hard as I could to try and prevent the inevitable? Or was I going to let go and take my chances? And after many, many years of reading and studying and practicing the spiritual path, I thought to myself, maybe I could trust and just see what happens. And then what started to arise was everything I had done and accomplished in life, like a set of dominoes set up, you know, when you hit one and they all fall down. And I thought, well, I'm going to trust. Because I remember reading somewhere, all fear was an illusion, walk straight ahead. So I thought, I'm going to choose this path. And I just kind of let myself go. And as I did, I could see these dominoes fall. One was my life, one was my body, one was my mind, one was my children, one was my home, one was my business, one, and it just, my family and my friends, and they went one after the other, one after the other, one after the other. And as the last one fell, the energy disappeared. All thought vanished with it, and I was left in this state of what I could probably only describe of as a unity and a force of love that connected me with everything. So there was no longer a you and an I. There was no longer any thought trying to figure out what had happened. Everything was just glowing with this kind of magnetic field of love that was part of everything, including myself. So that was the start of it. And that went on for, you know, that particular condition went on for about 10 months. And then slowly thought began to return, but in a completely different way than it had. So it has taken the last maybe 3 years since 2005. It took about 3 years to find ways to kind of integrate those two together so that I could function in the world. Because, you know, I do have bills. I do have responsibilities. I do have things in life that I'm committed to and that I'm working on. So I had to find a way, and you know, my children were a big part of me to pushing myself forward to find a way to be able to function and still have this stunning silent stillness kind of pervade me or come on me whenever it felt like it. Because, you know, the field of consciousness is not stable. It's always being influenced by conditions. So one minute it would be like I have some kind of clear thought about a situation and could function, and then the next moment that would all disappear and this stunning silence would come over me and I wouldn't be able to do anything. So it's taken some time to be able to work with that in a way where I'm comfortable with it, because it was for a time a terrifying experience.
Absolutely.
Whenever my mind returned, so did the fear. And then it would disappear, and there was no problem. So it has been that distinction between those two worlds that a lot I've learned since then is part of the integration of being able to function and be of some use in the world while at the same time. So it's kind of like managing it. How do you manage that kind of integration? So that's been the journey.
Yeah. And there's a few things I want to pick up there, JC. But the first thing I wanted to explore deeper with you is this whole notion of death. I guess we could call it the ultimate letting go of this incarnation. And I guess for many people, it's almost like except for some people, it's conscious, but I think for the vast majority of people, it's unconscious. This ever-present existential angst that is in existence underneath our level of awareness that leads us to do many, many different things in the world, and a lot of them aren't necessarily that fruitful to the individual or to the greater whole or the collective. And I was just wondering if you could actually spend a bit more time just talking about this fear of death and why has it been so pushed down that we can't even recognize it?
Well, you know, I think it's Buddha that said the only real sin is the sin of ignorance. So that's enough to scare you half to death right there. You know, I say to my children, there's no such thing as death. Things just change. Things just move into different form or in and out of existence, you might say. But when you are attached to a body, a history, an identity, an ego that tells you that it's running the show and there's a you and everybody else, and your job is to go out there and get your piece of the pie, you know, to succeed and to try and organize your life in a way that's comfortable and risk-free so that you can kind of avoid that last moment or stepping through that last door. But it's coming, and it's coming for everybody. And if one of the lessons I've learned in terms of letting go from a linear perspective is that my whole life has been the practice of letting go. And I think maybe you have to speak to God about that, but maybe that's there so that you can get kind of versed in what it's like to let go, because you're going to have to anyway. Nobody gets out alive. So it's coming. So the better you are at knowing the truth of the matter, and the closer you are to seeing things the way they truly are, the easier it is to let go. So coming out of ignorance of the way things appear into the light of day, let's say, begins to alleviate those fears of life. So then you can be committed to things, but you can walk away from things. You know, you can lose your business and not have it bother you. You can lose people you love. And I'm not saying you wouldn't mourn that or wouldn't upset you. But who you've become in the matter it gives it a different kind of a flavor. So when we're dealing with that kind of a concept of letting go, because really that's what it is. It's a concept from the mind that I'm attached to that, and if I lose it, I'm going to suffer. And that concept is a source of a lot of suffering. But when you can begin to see it for what it really is, that in, you know, at a higher, these are terms that are incorrect, but I don't know any other way to say them. At a higher level of consciousness, what you see is that there isn't anything to let go of, because it's an illusion anyway. Everything's impermanent, and it's coming and going, and it has no basis in reality, so to speak. Now, the tree is standing there, and the building is standing there, or the car you own is in the driveway, and the home you own and you're sitting in. But you can be with those things in a way that it doesn't bother you whether they come or they go. Now, they're nice to have, but you know, the mudra you hold, or the posture you hold, or the position you hold about that determines how much you're going to suffer over it or not suffer. So when you can let things come and go out of your life, knowing that it's all impermanent anyway, then you're free of it. So things just come and things just go. Things just come and things just go. It doesn't mean you don't have feelings about things and emotions about things, but even those are fleeting. It's all fleeting. The mind, a thought, arises and disappears. Yes? You stop cutting the grass, everything grows over, and you can't even notice your back garden anymore. You leave something unattended, it begins to be consumed by the universe. So what appears to be solid at one level of consciousness, you see at a different level of consciousness as something impermanent that's just coming and going. And when you can live a life like that, you're much more effective. You certainly have a lot more peace in your life. And there's, you know, the stress that takes out of your life, you know, is beneficial to your health, if we're practical about it. And you just live a life that has, you see the world in a different way. You see the world without labels, without identification. Things are just there, but they don't have a label, because as soon as you label it, it becomes real, yes?
Mm.
The car, we call it a car. That's a concept.
Mm.
A house, we call a house. It's a concept. And we use these concepts in order to function in the world, and they're quite effective.
Mm.
But you want to know what you're dealing with. But that's not a car, and that's not a house. At another level of consciousness, it looks completely different. It's just form emerging in that particular shape.
Mm.
And that comes about when the conditions are appropriate.
Mm.
So if anything, you can influence, you know, a lot of the questions that I went through were asking, they're kind of like how-to questions. How do I let go of this, and how do I, my business, and how to? Well, that's the mind trying to find a way out of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't really anything to do about letting go, because ultimately it doesn't exist.
Mm.
So the answer to how do you let go is you don't.
Mm.
Because the more you try to, the more you resist, the more it persists, the more you suffer. Until one gets a glimpse of the way things truly are, then we're kind of trapped in this delusion of thinking we can hold on to things.
Mm.
And that we can keep them there, keep shining them and polishing them, and they won't fall apart.
Mm.
But I'm impermanent. I look in the mirror now, and I certainly don't look like I did when I was 20.
Mm.
I'm on the way out. Everything's on the way out.
Mm.
And that's the nature of life. I walked outside today and I could see the buds coming up on the tree. 2 weeks ago, there weren't any. That's shifting and changing. The conditions are appropriate. Now that something's trying to blossom.
Mm.
And in the fall, that will disappear. But we are the same. And the problem resides in the mind, in the perception, and the level of consciousness at which you're perceiving. And perceiving is a function of ego. In fact, beyond the ego, there's no such thing as perception. Mm. You don't perceive anymore, because what you are is in the presence of the essence of reality. There is no conversation going on.
Mm.
Which is very difficult to comprehend with the mind. The mind can't conceive of not existing. Hence the dilemma, and the biggest obstacle to enlightenment is transcending the mind.
Because
it will do whatever it can to keep itself in the position it's in.
Mm.
And it's gotten, you know, humanity a long way, but it's also done a lot of it's also created a lot of problems.
Mm.
Lots of them in my own life.
It is almost that linear world is addicted to solidity, to permanence, to security,
yes,
to certainty.
To appearance, to form.
Absolutely.
If you're coming from a place of viewing the world and the appearances of it, it's an illusion. Anything to do with form or appearance is illusion.
Mm.
Now, you could touch it. It feels real. But ultimately, it's empty.
Mm.
Including our thoughts. We have a thought, and we have an emotion that goes with it.
Mm.
But if we surgically opened you up, you wouldn't be able to find them.
Mm.
It's all fleeting. And the more... the more real an attachment looks to you, or the more real an emotional feels to you, the more real it becomes for you.
Mm.
So instead of having an upset and letting it come and go, you know what it's like when you put a hook in a fish's mouth and he tries to get away? The hook goes in even deeper, yes?
Right, okay.
So the resistance of the fish trying to get away from the hook
just gets him even further on the hook.
He ends up in the boat.
Mm.
Or on your dinner plate.
Cool.
But you see, it's that trying to avoid it, which is just more of the problem.
Right.
It's trying to change it, which is more of the problem. It's trying to seek some way out. There isn't.
Mm.
You just perpetuate the same paradigm or level of consciousness, trying to seek your way through, trying to work your way through. I often say that you can't think your way to heaven.
Mm.
Science might have something to say about that. But they hit a wall at some point too.
Mm.
Because you have to get beyond the mind in order to see things the way they truly are. Okay. Even if that's for a moment, even if that's for 5 seconds, which is kind of in the beginning what it's like, you have moments of it. And I'm sure many people that are on the call have had that, where everything is, there's just no attachment to anything because there's nothing going on. Because in reality, there isn't anything going on. That's a function of the mind. So to say that letting go, how you let go is to not let go, is a funny way of saying it. You can't make letting go happen. Because there's nothing happening to begin with.
Awesome.
Don't tell your doctor that.
Now, JC, as I mentioned earlier on, we had questions come in from all around the world, so I thought I'd actually kick off some of those questions now. And I was going to ask you a question from Fraser in the United States on how to let go, but we've just explored a lot of that, just in the things that you just said there. So I'm actually going to ask a question from Rhonda, who is in the US. And Rhonda asks, I have been in an 8-year on-again, off-again relationship. We were supposed to move in together last year, but he decided it wouldn't work. Yet he keeps coming back to me. I need to let go and stop this horrible cycle. My heart is broken. I've spent 8 years wanting this to work, but am unable to do so. I need guidance and strength to move past this. What do I do? Thank you.
Yes. You know, in my experience of life and in relationships, everyone I've ever been in was the perfect person to teach me something. You know, at one level, it's all about the relationship. At another level, it's all about your spiritual development towards enlightenment. And God has a funny way of bringing things into your life or you contributing to the conditions that bring things in your life to set up that lesson. So in a particular case, you know, if I look at my own life, I've had some relationships that I've had a horrible time trying to let go of. But when I look back, I can see how much I've learned in terms of letting go when I finally did. Now, most of us end up letting go when we've suffered so much, we've had enough, we just can't take it anymore, and we let go and surrender. And then what usually comes over someone is a kind of a freedom. But, you know, the ego is a stubborn thing. And some people's egos are much stronger than others, and they refuse to let go. They're unwilling to surrender the situation, truly, because there's still something in it for them. Now, I won't mean that to be crude. I just mean it to be straight. Anything that's going on is going on for a particular reason, and if you're approaching life from a level of spiritual development, which is what I always try to do, what is it I'm learning? I'm learning the art of letting go. And what am I learning about myself? That maybe these kinds of people I'm attracting into my life because there's something about me. My world is the way it is the world, so let me say that again, sorry, the world is the way it is because of the way I am.
Mm.
So there's something going on with my development that keeps influencing the conditions that manifest that type of a relationship. And I've had the same problem, God, I couldn't count how many times. And it all appears real. If they would just do this, if they would just be that way, if they would just this and just that, this would all turn out.
Mm.
Well, you know what? If they were like that, you probably wouldn't want to be with them anyway, because you're not with them for that reason.
Mm.
You see? Do you know that movie, I forget the name of it, but it had Julie Roberts in it, and she played a street prostitute and...
Oh, Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman, that was it.
Yeah.
I can't forget, remember the other guy's name, but...
Richard
and he's this multi-billionaire successful guy, and she's this street prostitute.
Mm.
In reality, that doesn't happen. Right?
Mm.
You wouldn't be attracting that into your life in that given situation. So what a person is drawing into their lives, it's pretty much concurrent with where they are in terms of their level of consciousness and their spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
So that person has drawn that person into their life to learn something. If you don't learn it, the lessons are repeated until you do.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the closer you are to seeing the reality of a situation, the easier it is to kind of let go.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you shift a gear. Letting go is not something you do. That's more of the mind.
Mm.
That's more doing. What do I do? That's like the world of form and action and thinking and processing and managing and manipulating and trying to find a way to have it be this way or that way. That just keeps perpetuating the whole situation. It's interesting that she mentioned for the last 8 years.
Mm.
The lesson is repeated. And in my own experience, if I haven't learned the lesson and I've moved on to somebody else, I have a similar experience because I didn't get the point in the last one.
Mm.
So now it's repeating itself again here.
Mm.
You see? So letting go for most people comes with a fear of loss, but they're not relating to letting go like a freedom. You know, it's like responsibility. You tell people, I've got some more responsibility for you. And what they think is, oh, that's just going to take more time. I'm too busy. But they don't get the real relationship that the more responsible you become, the more freedom you experience.
Mm.
So the way they are relating to it is off.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's helpful.
That was great, yeah.
But it's from my own experience. It's repeated until learned.
Mm.
So if we're dealing with things the way they really are, there's nothing to let go of. There's only something to learn and grow from.
Mm. Awesome. That's a really...
Which has been a hard lesson, for me. And until you let go, I think one of the questions was, what happens when you let go of everything? Well, the answer is you transcend duality.
Mm.
But few have the tenacity and the strength to be willing to actually surrender absolutely everything.
Mm.
Because in the end, you have to surrender your life.
Mm.
So there's all, it's usually conditional. I'll do that if I get that.
Right.
You see? Which is more of playing with the toys in the box. You can't solve the problem it was created at.
Mm.
Cool. I don't know. I hope that helps.
No, I think that was an excellent answer. And thank you, Rhonda, as well. It was a very thought-provoking question. Now, this one, JC, comes from Michael in South Africa. And Michael asks...
South Africa. A nice... It's pouring down rain in London.
Hi, JC. I lost my business that was successful for me for many years. I find it difficult to let go because I spent lots of money building up the brand name.
Yes, I remember reading that one. I've lost a few businesses. Like I was at you know, what I had built at the time was a very successful executive coaching business. I was working with some of the biggest companies in the world, the biggest investment banks, the biggest oil companies. I was being flown around the world in Learjets, smoking big cigars, thinking I was Jack the Lad, had arrived, making lots of money, buying bigger and bigger homes. And you know what? It was all built on sand. There was no true humility in that. There was no, I wasn't relating to my, you know, it was all about my success and climbing the corporate ladder and being seen in a particular way, having people notice who I was. So, one of the problems about being on a spiritual path is everything that's in the way of you and realizing that you're enlightened has to be worked through. Because they're the obstacles from the view or the glimpse that we're talking about. Because everybody's enlightened, it's just obscured by the obstacles. You don't become something in reality. I'm becoming a better athlete. But in the spiritual domain, it doesn't work like that. You already are. And there's some things in the way of that view of you seeing it or experiencing that. So in terms of business, the attachment I had to my business, it all just started to disappear. I had no more clients. There was no more flying around. The house got sold. The car went. The marriage fell apart. Everything happened. And I was left in a little flat, you know, with my head spinning, thinking what had happened. And now years after, looking back, I can see that the principles and the ethics in which I built that during my spiritual development were completely out of integrity. So again, what was the lesson? Well, I built a whole world out of sand, and when I grew spiritually enough, it all had to go because it wasn't built on the right premise. So what was the lesson? The lesson for me in letting go of something when I began to work with this, I mean, I've only gotten better at letting go because of all the suffering of having to let go in a lifetime of working with this. You know, I've been interested in this since I was 12. So it's not like I had some magic formula about it all. I've just suffered my way through and have gotten a little bit better at saying, you know, I can let it come and go. I can let it come and go. In fact, holding on prevents what's trying to be given to you anyway. You know, the suffering doesn't come from the business going. The suffering comes from the attachment to the business. People think it's the item itself. It's the man, it's the woman, it's the business, it's the form that's now gone and now I'm suffering. But that's not what we're truly suffering about. What we're suffering over is that we're attached to that thing. So again, if you're dealing with reality, the closer you are to it, the easier it is to see things the way they truly are. The more freedom and peace you experience, the easier it is to let these things just kind of don't bother you anymore. But it isn't the things of life we suffer over. It's our attachment to those things. And that is a major distinction in the pathway of learning to get better at letting it just come and go. You know, because then you can give it up. It's like saying, am I willing to let go of who I am for what I can become? well, that's a tough thing when I've built a whole world around what I think I am. Can I keep walking away from everything? Can I keep walking away from how I see myself? Can I keep walking away from thinking that, you know what, I don't have a clue what I'm doing half the time? And for someone who thought I had it all together and was dealing with some of the smartest people on the planet, you know what I mean? I've stumbled through. It isn't from some magic formula. It's from a lot of pain and suffering of thinking I knew what I was doing. Look, giving up a business, you know, letting go of a business, what's the, you know, being attached to a brand. To suffer over that, to me, is insane. Because a brand is a concept. A concept comes from the mind. The mind is part of the world of form. Form is an illusion. You're suffering over an illusion. That's insanity. To suffer over an illusion is insanity. But that's what most of us are doing.
It's almost like
look around the world.
Yeah, collectively that's playing out on a massive scale around the world.
Yeah, if you take that globally, fighting here, doing this there, you know, all of that that's going on, over what? Over what they perceive to be the reality. Hang around for another 9,000 years.
Cool. Thanks, Michael. That was
personally, I'd like this to be the last life. We'll see.
Cool, JC. This one comes from Dave in the UK. And Dave asks, what ways do you recommend to overcome fears when letting go?
Say that again.
In what ways do you recommend to overcome fears when letting go?
Ah, great question. When I was on the floor, I was terrified. I thought my life's coming to an end. This is it. Game over. And the first thing that arises is terror and fear of the loss of existence. Because the ego is now about to realize the game's up. Yes? So fear, which I've heard said in many different ways, false evidence appearing real, you know? There's a couple of other meanings I've heard like that, but the language isn't very nice, so I don't think I'll bother saying that. But fear itself is an illusion. But until you begin to see that, now, that doesn't mean you walk out in front of a bus. That, to me, is discernment. That's going to hurt. But fear within itself, and, you know, I went through some excruciating fear after what happened in 2005. You know, after about 10 or 11 months, my mind started to return, and it was absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. I thought I'd been abandoned by God. I thought I was going insane. It was terrifying. But when I look back, you know, it's hindsight is 20/20, you know. When I look back, I can see, wow, you know, none of that was even real. In fact, you could say that nothing happened at all. You know, I tell this story. You asked me to tell you the story of 2005. Well, from a level beyond opposites and duality, nothing happened at all. Because there's nothing happening there. It's the mind that creates that. All fear comes from the mind. It's you know, all concept comes from the mind. All perception comes from the mind. The position you hold in life, the view you have of yourself, what you think about yourself, how you feel about yourself. Isn't it just the mind? But we relate to the mind like it's who we are. You relate to your mind like it's the truth, that what you see is reality, and it is who you are. But that's like saying I'm my foot. Hmm. Beyond, I had the experience when all thought vanished, and I was standing in front of a mirror. I had this big mirror in my room, and I looked at, you know, the object that was reflecting back. And without any thought, there is no interpretation of what that is. So it wasn't like, oh, there's JC, and here's his history, and looks like he's lost a little bit of weight, and, you know, maybe I should join the gym, and all of this, right?
Mm.
There was nothing. There was this object standing in front of the mirror. It wasn't even me. So you see, from a different place, it's about as significant as a piece of furniture. But when you're dealing with your mind, it can come up with some nasty stuff.
Mm.
And really, the spiritual path doesn't begin until these things arise. A good friend of mine was just telling me this last week. It really, the journey begins when, for whatever reason, karmically or whatever's happening in your development towards enlightenment, these things begin to arise. And that is part of the journey. These are the obstacles that are in the way.
Mm.
So one of the suggestions I would have is to be able to try and view things for what they really are. You give it a name called fear. I give it a name called anxiety. I give it a name called it's a car, it's a tree, it's a house. The concepts, it's the conceptual mind.
Mm.
Labeling everything. The minute you label something, it becomes real.
Mm.
The moment you transcend duality, there's no more labels.
Mm.
What you just see is the manifestation and the emergence of God's beauty. Everything is just there, glowing and emerging based on the conditions, and because it can do that.
Hmm.
So it's just doing what it's doing. It doesn't have a name. You can't, the names disappear because that would require thought.
Hmm.
But you know, there's this Zen saying, fish come from water, but water does not come from fish. And what that Zen master was trying to explain is, when, if you want to see a fish, first you see the water. And then you see the fish in the water. And then you don't see the water anymore. What you're now looking at is the fish, you see?
Hmm.
So you translate that to the mind and enlightenment. First you have to see the mind. Once you can really see the mind and get the reality of how things work, you see reality. Once you see reality, you no longer see the mind. You with me?
Mm, absolutely.
So first you see the water, which is your mind.
Mm.
Then you see the fish in the water, which is you enlightened.
Mm.
And once you see that, you no longer see the water.
Mm.
So, do you see the dilemma?
Mm. Absolutely.
I don't even know if I answered the question.
Cool. You've given lots of...
I did somebody some good. Because it sure confused me.
I think Jesse the do you see the question or do you see the answer? It's probably
yeah, right. Don't try and think your way through this because it's not going to work. You're not going to think your way through this. You just keep you know, you just keep getting stuck. You can't think your way out of this. That's part of the problem. And in a world where we're paid for the quality of our thinking and how sharp our minds are and our education is based on our brains, you've been developed to think that that's the answer for everything. Mm. I can think my way out of it. You can't.
Cool. But thank you, Dave. That was a great question. Now, JC, I'm actually going to do something that I've only done once before on a Pepe Schmidt call, and that's I'm going to ask you if we can actually extend the call for 10 minutes. I think the material that's coming through is so profound that like I'd really love to have the opportunity to ask a few more questions that have come in from people because it's mesmerizing what you're sharing. Cool, okay. This question comes from Leah, who is in the United Kingdom, and Leah asks, in this uncertain world of today after the credit crunch, how can you achieve peace with making various financial decisions, i.e. like investing or buying a house, and then be able to let go without worrying about these decisions given the recent events? This is currently traumatizing me, and although I have never been indecisive before, I find myself paralyzed by fear when making long-term financial decisions now and am literally losing sleep. Can you please help?
Yes. The financial crisis in London, investment, money, all of these wonderful things that we've created that have, in the long run, created so much stress for people. I worked in investment banking. Last year, 6 people jumped out of windows. Mm. Now, you can't tell me a job is worth that. Mm. One guy had to throw a chair at the window 3 times to break the glass.
Mm.
You see? So, the insanity of what the mind is capable of creating and deluding you with is phenomenal. It becomes, you know, the attachment, particularly when I worked in the city, the attachment that these guys had on the trading floors and the obsession that they had to generate what they were being told to generate was driving them crazy. So, again, we're dealing with a similar situation. You look at the outside circumstances in life, and then what you do is you then take that in and begin to make decisions based on what you're seeing out in the world. But if what you're seeing out in the world is really elusive and ever coming and going, but you don't know that, it looks real. So I am afraid of losing my money. I am afraid of investing. But you know what? The fear of that alone perpetuates the same thing. Yes? The more you resist it, the more it persists. Now, there's some people around who are real risk takers that are willing to, I've met them, entrepreneurs that are willing to put their money where their mouth is and lose every penny of it and come back and make twice as much. Mm. But most of us aren't like that. Most of us work hard for what we've got, and we don't want to lose it. And we don't want to lose it, and there's a fear about doing that.
Mm.
But the problem with fear is it's a very strong emotion, and it has the power to attract, you know, what you fear most usually comes into your life.
Mm.
So that incessive fear of losing things can often have you lose them. Because what you're doing, fear is like an intention you put into the field of consciousness that alters the conditions of your life. Let me give you a different slant on it. If I send a prayer out, if I'm meditating for world peace, if what I do in life is coming from a place of what's in the best interest of humanity and in the name of the highest good, that those intentions go into the field of consciousness that influence the conditions in my life.
Mm.
You see?
Mm.
So if you're playing small, what you would be doing would be saying, you know what, I've got a penny pinch here, I've got to do this there, I've got to make sure I don't lose that there, I'm frightened of doing that there, and, you know, my intention is to keep everything to make sure I don't lose a penny. My intention is to place the right bet on the right horse.
Mm.
All of those things, right? With a fear of losing my money. It's not a very powerful context and intention to be sending into the field of consciousness.
Mm.
You know, my prayers get shorter and shorter because most prayers are just demands on God.
Mm.
That's not a true prayer. You know, I could say a prayer that says, please, dear God, you know, let me serve in some manner today in the name of the highest good and be of some use to humanity. Please show me and guide me and direct me that I may serve. Now, that context has a completely different effect. But you know what it's like saying? At that moment I was on the floor, I chose to let go. The other option was to cling on and try and grasp for life and right down to the very last second. Now, I can't prove any of this, but I would bet on it that letting go requires trust.
Mm.
That intention sends out a message into the field of consciousness, which is completely different than I'm terrified, I don't trust, I don't know what's next, and I'm not going to let go.
Mm.
So you alter the direction, the karmic direction of what's coming next, just through that choice. My choice was to let go. I went, come on, what do you got? Let's get on with it. I trust. I trust in God. I trust that what's happening is happening because it's time for it to happen. And this is my time, and I'm here, and I'm yours.
Hmm.
That's different than scraping and grabbing and grasping and not trusting and being unwilling to let the universe, or the God of your understanding, or whatever you want to call it, operate in your life. One's run out of self-will, one's God's will. When I suffer, it's usually my self-will. When I'm at peace, it's usually God's will. That's how I determine how the day's going.
Mm.
When I really get involved into it, when I'm really digging in trying to make everything happen, when I'm really getting fearful or anything like that, I know that's me. I know that's the mind. I know that I'm operating from self-will.
Mm.
Now, to relinquish your will and trust in God's will requires, you know, for many, a little bit of practice. Because now you're dealing with the invisible. And there isn't any guarantee. Maybe God's will for this person is to lose everything. Can you live with that? Maybe God's will is that every penny you've ever saved goes on to something that you invest in, and in 2 days, every bit of it's gone. Can you trust that was God's will? So you're always dealing with your will versus God. My experience is the power lies in relinquishing my willfulness and my will for the will of God. And then God rolls the dice, you influence the field, and things begin to manifest. And you may not like them. That doesn't mean things turn out every time. They could get worse. But it's how you're relating to it. It's not that life's not going to kick you in the butt. It's how you relate to it. One relates to it as a victim. Two guys grow up in the Bronx. One guy turns into a junkie, and his brother turns into the heavyweight champion of the world.
Hmm.
He related to his childhood different than the other guy. He used it as an opportunity to do something with his life, and the other one died in the gutter.
Hmm.
It was the same neighborhood. But you see, how he was relating to it was completely different. And that is part of, you know, my spiritual practice. It's the practice of whatever's going on in my life, I can see as God's will for me at this time. You know, I've had a terrible year.
Mm.
what I'm seeing. I'm working with that, trying to see that, what is the lesson here? What is the karma I'm burning off? What am I working through so that at the end of this ride, I have an even deeper relationship with the God of my understanding? Mm. Not I've been victimized, I've been screwed, they took my money, I'm going to sue everybody. See how much happiness that brings you. Mm. You know, from having all that I had to having what I have now, which is almost nothing, I've never been happier. Mm. In fact, I don't even want, there isn't anything I want. I think sometimes, what do you want? And I can't think of anything. Well, I think I need some new socks. There's some holes in the ones I've got. It's about as far as I get.
Mm.
I don't think there's some exotic place I've got to get to, some corporate food chain I've got to climb.
Mm.
I'm not saying that's for everybody. But once you've stepped across that, you know, gone through that gate, once you've seen and had a glimpse of reality and the way things are, all that desire disappears anyway.
Mm.
That's just more delusion. Desire leads to attachment, yes?
Mm.
I want one of them. I think it's a blue one.
I think that just reminded me that...
I took my children into the computer shop last week. Oh, my God. You can see it. They're 12, 10, and 8. You should see the grasping going on at that age.
Mm.
I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. Oh, I got to get this. Oh, this is the new upgrade. It's absolutely insane.
Mm.
And then the mother says, we don't have the money for that, and they start crying and they suffer. Because they don't know, you know?
Mm.
I certainly didn't know at that age.
I was going to say, Jesse, it just reminded me of, read a statistic during the week that that Gandhi actually had 8 items in his possession, like at the end of his life. It literally
that many.
Amazing. But he whittled it down to 8 possessions. But
that's shocking he had that many.
The truth is out.
Yeah.
Okay, Jesse.
Well, you could just see it, you know. So some people want to have a U-Haul full of everything they own dragged behind a hearse.
Mm.
It's not going to work like that.
Mm. Cool. Now, one question I wanted to finish with, JC, that comes from Monica, who is in the UK, and Monica asks, how do you know or recognize when you have completely let go?
How do you recognize? Well, you know, a minute ago I distinguished my will versus God's will, yes?
Mm.
When I'm no longer attached to an illusion, there's a sense of freedom and peace. It no longer clouds my space like an emotion. It no longer takes up space in my head. I'm no longer concerned. That doesn't mean I can't be committed to something. You can be committed to something and completely unattached to it. And that is a great way to live life. So one has freedom to it, to trust and to let go and surrender into life, even if that's moment by moment, in the practice of becoming enlightened, brings with it the benefit. And the benefit is usually a still kind of quiet peacefulness about the situation.
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether it's there or not anymore. It's nice that it's there, and it's okay if it's not.
Mm.
You don't need it, or you can have it. There's a real choice and a freedom in there. There is no freedom and choice when you're attached. You know, I used to work with a lot of addicts and alcoholics. There's no freedom in an addiction.
Mm.
There's no choice in there. So for me, the distinction is, if I've let go, I'm right with myself again. I'm at peace with myself again. The obsessive thinking's not there anymore. The emotion is left. And I can take it or leave it. Really, that's the bottom line. You can take it or leave it. If you can't, you know, if you can't let go of it, then it has you. If you can let go of it, you have it. You with me?
Absolutely.
If you have to have it, it has you. If you don't have to have it, you have it.
Amazing.
Am I making any sense?
Absolutely. Well, JC, I just really wanted to take this opportunity on behalf of not just myself, but I'm just very, very grateful for the past hour and 10 minutes that we've shared together, but also on behalf of everyone listening in from around the world. I think what you've shared in these moments has been incredibly profound and thought-provoking, and I guess the promise or the intention that we set at the start of the call of giving people a glimpse of what actually lies beyond the karma, our upbringing, our beliefs, our filters. You've certainly given us a real insight today.
Fantastic. And, you know, God bless everybody and thank you for being on the call.
Yeah.
What a fantastic conversation to be in. And, you know, it's growing bigger and bigger and fantastic.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, JC,
for
people who...
What's that?
I was just wondering if you could also, like, for people who wanted to get in touch with you and follow your work more closely. I know you've got lots of resources on your website. I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can get in touch with you and how they can actually find more about your work.
The website's probably the easiest, which is jcmac.net. So that's jcmac.net. And there's a link from there to Facebook, and there's... I'm terrible with technology, but I think you can click on from there, and there's some audios on there, some videos on there, things like that. You can contact me by email. I'll always reply. And that's probably the simplest. Some, you know, I get emails from people from all over the world just to say thank you or have a comment, or sometimes I'm walking down the street and someone just phones me and we have a chat. I had a lady called me from France this week. A little 10-minute chat was great. So feel free.
Awesome.
If I can be of any use, feel free.
Cool. Thanks, JC. Now, for those of you who would actually like to listen to this call again, we will be making it available for free on the People You Should Meet website tomorrow morning. I know I certainly will be listening to this call again and again. You also may feel that this material could be of incredible service to a friend, a family member, a colleague. So one of the things we do encourage on People You Should Meet and is an underlying philosophy is actually taking that first step forward and actually sharing freely the opportunities that come our way. So one thing I encourage you all, if you feel moved to, is to take that first step forward to actually share this material as freely and as liberally as you possibly can, because it's literally up there and it's free and it's there to serve. So do take that step forward.
Fantastic.
Great. And I guess just in coming to the end of the call, JC, I was just wondering if there are any final words that you would like to leave with people on the topic of letting go.
No, I think I just, you know, I want to say everything's perfect. Everything's fine. You know, all you really need to do is be kind to all things, harm nothing, love yourself, be of service. That it'll take you all the way. You know, you don't have to have happen what I had happen. You don't have to have your life disrupted for 5 years and lose everything. You don't need to do that. Just live a good life. I think it was the Dalai Lama that said, if you want to be a very spiritual being, just live a good human life.
Mm.
Be kind to all things, harm nothing.
Mm.
Everything's accounted for. Nobody gets away with anything.
Mm.
So you can really influence the conditions in your life by the intentions you have behind what it is you do. And if it's in the service of the Most High, you can bet there's some good things coming.
Mm.
So God bless you all, and thank you so much, Damien, for letting me be part of this and this global conversation we're trying to create.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always my pleasure, JC, and we can't wait to have you back on the program in the future as well. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Enjoy the weather over there.
I will. And thank you, everyone at home. It's you that, at home, that really make these conversations come alive. The questions that we had sent in this week were really thought-provoking and profound. And
yes, great.
They were just great for both me and JC. So
yeah.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, JC.
Bye for now.
Speak soon.
Bye.